Before we get going, if you recall, a week or so ago, I talked about Representative Slocum having a... It was Representative Slocum. Having a subcommittee of sorts to look at, dig in a little deeper to financial aid, a working group to look at financial aid. And so I told her I'd put a couple other members on, so I'm going to put references. I'm talking about your little working group, Representative Slocum, and I'm going to appoint Representative Haas and Representative McFarlane to be on it with you. So you guys can start, although they didn't even show up for the hearing, so I don't know how we're going to dig into financial aid, but that's what I would like you to do with that group. We also have with us today the 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, I assume that's what it is. But where are you students from?
Project Lead.
Well, welcome to the Capitol. And we were supposed to have a committee hearing, but the governor's staff person at the Office of Higher Education didn't show up. So we'll just have to wing it while we're here. Representative Gunther. Do you want to present the governor's budget?
I think Representative Lawrence, is he here?
No. What we'll do is my plan was to have Ms. Hegard, by the way, I believe this is her second to the last day. And here she is.
Yes.
We thought you skipped that.
Oh, I'll just do a thing like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're ready, Ms. Hegard, if you want to come up in front of us. And we want to welcome you to the committee. And I think all of us want to sincerely thank you for your public service, for you did from Project Lead. Ms. Hegard is going, she's in her second to the last day, I assume, or
last day
of public service, and will be going to the Bush Foundation to lead their education.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Department. And so she is a good example, students, why we should tax based on income, because she's going to be making a lot more than she did, and she can help solve this deficit we're in, so we don't have to cut you kids. So welcome, Ms. Hegard.
Happy to be of service.
To the committee. And go ahead and start off with, and I don't know which way you want to go through it. Do you want to start with financial aid section?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is you want for me to go through the whole budget. So
right.
I don't know what your members have before them. Do they have?
They have a
budget book. Okay.
That, so, with what little information we did get, they have.
Well, we could give you more paper.
We're going to get it from Minsky and the university. You don't have to worry about that.
Okay.
But go ahead and then start with the budget pages for OAC.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair and members, I think what I'll... I have a few overview comments, and then I thought I might go through the Office of Higher Ed, then some of the programs, and then I get... I finish with the U of M and Minsky budget. Does that make sense?
Go ahead.
All right. So if you want to just walk through in your budget books, there's this document, page one, Office of Higher Education. You can just kind of, hopefully my voice will hold up. We're in a tough time right now. It's tough all around. And our economy's in a crisis, you know, situation. And Minnesota's not immune from that. Higher ed's not immune either. And one of the things that the governor stated in his state of the state was that there were some areas of the budget that he intended to protect to the extent possible, and K-12 was one of those areas. That's a big chunk of state spending. And so when one area of the budget is protected, other areas do end up taking a larger share of the reduction. So it's tough all around, and these are very, very difficult times. So for the Office of Higher Education, the budget reflects a $15 million or 4% reduction for the biennium from the base. A couple things that we really tried to do when we were putting this budget together, we tried to minimize the impact of reductions directly on students, and I'll speak more to that in a minute. Because 92% of our budget is general fund dollars, and those dollars are awarded directly to students, it's tough still to protect students entirely from a budget reduction of this magnitude. For the state grant program, the governor did not recommend a reduction. He initially talked about a reduction, but I think after looking at the budget more deeply and looking at the difficult times students are going to have, losing jobs and families losing jobs and things, I think he felt it was important to not reduce the state grant program at all. And I think the good news there is that the feds are looking at a stimulus package that will provide some infrastructure funding as well as some money for the Pell Grant program. We're hearing different numbers. It could be as much as $60 million. Probably it's going to be not quite that much, but that could be up to a $400 bump, per student in the Pell Grant program, which would be great. Our agency administration will be reduced by 10%, and that's $532,000 for the biennium. That's a lot. We've already taken several reductions, and so we're not... Fortunately, we are able to deal with this reduction by not having any layoffs. But the reason why we're not having any layoffs is that we're not filling positions. So we've lost our accountability director. He took a job in Iowa. Emily Kassain, who did our library programs, and has left, and we're basically staffing those positions internally. So people are doing more. Other programs in the agency would be reduced by $6.4 million. And if you have questions that are specific, I'm just going to talk through some of this stuff. Please stop me in.
Well, why don't you go through at least your OAP part first, and then we'll have questions for that.
The Achieve Scholarship Program will be reduced by $10.5 million. That's out of a total appropriation of $19.2 million. And that reflects lower than anticipated demand for the program in its first year. And as you remember, that's something that a program that is very similar to the Federal Academic Competitiveness Grant. The budget includes an increase of $2.4 million for switching reciprocity with North Dakota because of increasing numbers of Minnesota students attending school there. And I want to make a couple comments about reciprocity. These are contracts, for those of you who don't know. We have a contract with North Dakota, we have a contract with South Dakota, we have a contract with Wisconsin, which we negotiated last year. And we look at these agreements every year. And usually there's a fair amount of parity there, but we've got a situation where we're having to pay North Dakota $2.4 million. And what's interesting is that North Dakota is sitting on a pile of oil and gas, and they've got a surplus. And so I mentioned this in the Senate, that I think it might be useful one of your hearings to have a discussion about the North, and at least have some time on the agenda for the North and South Dakota agreements, so that your members can understand them and understand some of the challenges that we're facing with those agreements. Wisconsin's just fine, but we've got some challenges with those two other agreements. So the agency profile, you turn to pages 3 through 6. We covered a lot of this already in the hearing on January 12th, so I'm not going to go into any detail on this. You've already heard from me here. And if you didn't, well, you can call me later.
Maybe longer.
He's not a serious offer.
Where's your office?
My new office is downtown. Simple. A teach scholarship on page 7. This is the first change item. A $1,200 scholarship is currently awarded to students who complete a set of college preparatory courses while in high school, and they come from families, and come from families with annual incomes of less than $75,000. This is a compromised piece of legislation, and they're really modeled a law to be consistent with the Federal Academic Competitiveness Grants, which go to federal Pell recipients who take similar courses. So the idea would be that these financial aid folks, both at high school and in college, wouldn't have to have two competing different programs to try to figure out. The two programs are very similar with a couple exceptions. The governor is recommending a reduction, as I mentioned, of $10.5 million, $5.45 million in FY 2010, and $5.5 million in FY 2011 to make the appropriation fit demand for the program. The resulting appropriation would be $4.15 million in FY 2010 and $4.55 million in 2011. About 2,400 students receive awards totaling $2.9 million in 2009. Demand is projected based on the number of recipients in FY09 plus 10% growth each year, which is typical of new aid programs. The appropriations for Achieve for 08 and 09 was $10.8 million, and the uses are described on the bottom half of page 7. I won't go into those in great detail. The governor recommends changing the program to increase awards to individual students who have completed an online course while in high school by $150. This is estimated to cost a total of $450,000 per year and will be paid out of unspent funds in the base appropriation. On page 10, just some more detail about the agency's administrative reduction. As I mentioned, it's $532,000 for the biennium, or $266,000 per year. As I said, we've really tried to prevent layoffs and holding positions open and taking the cuts from unused funds. However, the administrative reductions larger, layoffs will probably be worth looking at layoffs. The office will continue the hiring and salary freeze. It's across state government right now. Reduce out-of-state travel. Reduce printing and spending on employee development, and reduce purchase of supplies and software. The office's appropriation last biennium was reduced by $1.6 million in the OA session, including $111,000 in administrative funds. An additional $240,000 was unallotted in December of 08. So we faced some steep reductions as well. A little more detail on tuition reciprocity. It's on page 11. The governor is recommending an increase of $1 million in FY 2010 and $1.4 million in FY 2011 to cover increases in our obligation in North Dakota. And the reason, as I mentioned, is that Minnesota has many more high school graduates than North Dakota. There are a lot more students in Minnesota. There's 63,000 a year, 63,000 a year in Minnesota compared to 8,000 in North Dakota. And more Minnesota students are choosing to attend North Dakota campuses as a result. The self-loan moral obligation language on page 13. The governor is recommending new statutory language that would provide a moral obligation backup for revenue bonds issued for student loans under the self-loan program. For those of you who don't know, and I was one of those people, I'm not an expert in this area, but a moral obligation bond is a bond secured by a pledge that is non-binding, that any amount necessary to make up a deficiency for debt service will be included in the governor's budget request to the legislature. The Minnesota Housing Finance Agency currently has this type of authority. The legislature would not be legally bound to make the appropriation, but the governor would have to ask for it. Cell phones are used by students who want to borrow more than the limits in the federal Stafford Loan Program. Those of you who don't know what the cell phone program is, it's with a rate that's lower than bank rates, but it's higher than the federal loans, and a lot of students use these loans to supplement their education, and they have to have a co-signer. The agency successfully sold bonds for the program in December of 2008 after 15 months of trying to deal with the dramatic changes in the financial markets and the liquidity crisis. So we finally got a deal with First Bank. The agency continues to need to restructure the current outstanding portfolio and issue new bonds to ensure funds will be available for loans to students. With this authority, this moral obligation authority, financing will be easier to obtain, and it should have a positive effect on the ratings for the bonds. And I think if you have technical questions on this, I'm not the person to ask. I think there are other people in our agency who are better suited to respond to the technical questions on this issue.
Well, members, Ms. Hegart, you know, when you look at a sentence in there that says the Austin security market is no longer viably operating, and so even though those zeros are up at the top of the page, what would happen if everything went to heck? Then the state has to back them, right?
Well,
Brian, do you want to help out here?
Mr. Chairman, Trisha Grimes from the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. The governor would be obliged under this language to ask the legislature to back the bonds, but the legislature would not be legally bound to actually do that in response to the governor's request. Now, the option rate securities market has collapsed, which is part of why it took us 15 months to sell bonds in a program where we've never had trouble selling bonds before. The state of Minnesota had to take a bond offer off the table in late November that it finally sold, I believe, in early January. And so it is a different kind of market out there in the financial, in Wall Street and that financial world. This language would, oblige the governor to ask for the money in the event that we didn't have the money to repay the bonds with proceeds from the program. It's a mature program. It's been around since 1987. And there are always funds coming in from prior borrowers. So we think the likelihood of the state having to step in and pay them is small.
So you pay these bonds off with grad students who graduated and are meeting their financial obligation, and you've always had enough of a revolving loan fund for lack of a better word.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, there was thorough analysis that was done by all the finance people looking at kind of over time the financial stability of the portfolio of the loans coming in, being paid off, et cetera, and we have one of the lowest default rates in the country for us.
So who buys these bonds that now have the governor's moral obligation behind them, but no obligation by the legislature to be obligated to the governor's morals?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I can answer that question precisely, but it would be the same kind of people who currently buy bonds sold by the Minnesota Housing Finance Authority. Minnesota Housing Finance Authority has had this kind of language for many years.
Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry, I probably could look this up, but I'm curious. Does the SELF loan program exist standalone relative to obligations and kind of accounts receivable on the loans, or is it part of a broader portfolio of loans that you're managing? In other words, is this kind of all out on its own in terms of its risk, or is it part of the broader package at your office?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, this is the only loan program we currently operate in the office that's of any size. Back in 1987, the agency was a lender for what are called FFEL loans, Federal Family Education Loans, and there are a couple of other small, tiny loan programs. One was called the GRIP program that was used primarily by chiropractors, another was medical osteopathy loans. There are a handful of loans from those older programs still existing, but we do not have some state agencies are loan guarantee agencies, and they are also lenders for federal staffed loans. We are not.
Mr. Chairman, just one follow-up. Do you carry a cash reserve then? That's some percentage of our obligation, and could you explain where that is at?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, I would have to get back to you. I know we carry a cash reserve, and this is analyzed by our financial advising company every time we sell bonds and on an ongoing basis, but I'm sorry, I can't tell you about how much that is right now.
But in general, you'd say that we're kind of well within.
Mr. Chairman, yes, Representative Downey. One of the features of this program is that student borrowers have to have a creditworthy co-signer, and that's often apparent. And so when the borrower can't pay, which is relatively rare, the co-signer is on the line to pay, and so the security of the bonds is actually very high.
Ms. Grimes, is this the same fund that, and I wasn't on this committee then, maybe Representative Norris was, I can't remember if he was chaired or not, in 2003 that they took a bunch of money out of and used it for the general fund or something?
Mr. Chair, yes, it was this fund. It was $30 million. And since then, the covenants have been rewritten by some of the attorneys, I think, to prevent something like that from happening again in the future.
For the record, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
That was not the chair.
Okay. Well, I didn't know. I couldn't remember if you were or not. So $30 million was taken out of the fund. And how was that made up? Or how did the governor... He wasn't acting too moral then, but anyway. So how did he... how did that get made up? Or what happened to it? Did it just disappear to the general fund?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that it wasn't made up, that it was taken, and then what happened is the attorneys came in and rewrote some of the language so we could prevent that from happening to the program again in the future.
So it was a legislative grab or proposed by the governor. I don't know what. I just remember the money disappeared.
Mr. Chair, it was proposed by the governor and the legislature did not actually present it, so it happened.
So it was done by executive order?
It was done through the Department of Finance. I'm not sure exactly how the mechanism occurred. I'm sorry, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
Other program reductions, if you turn to page 15, the State Work Study Program. This reduction is $622,000 or 5% each year. About 500 fewer students will have state-funded work-study jobs on campuses due to this reduction. Currently, 11,000 students receive an average of $1,700 in earnings each year from the State Work-Study Program. There's a federal work-study program as well that operates on campuses, too. post-secondary child care grants, the reduction here is 5% or $309,000 each year from this program that provides grants to low-income students for child care expenses. About 150 students will fewer students will receive the grants each year. Currently, about 2,900 students receive an average of $2,000 each year. Full awards for the students with incomes at 130% of poverty or less and attend school full-time.
Go ahead, Representative Martin.
The American Indian Scholarship
Program. Hold on just a second, Mr. Chair. Go ahead, Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if you could clarify, is this the child care grants we often hear from testifiers, and we have a student in here the other day who had several young children, and I'm wondering, is this a fund that has had a lot of use? Has it not been used? Has it had a waiting list? Do we have any more information on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, my understanding is that the child care grants have been always been used, that there's been a waiting list sometimes for the grants. When there hasn't been a waiting list, well, there's almost always been a waiting list, to my understanding. I mean, a lot of students, you know, who have kids need a way to take care of the kids and pay for it, and it's been a very valuable program to campuses. But it operates separately from other state programs because it's connected to the state grant program. The American Indian Scholarship Program, that reduction, you remember that's the program that came to us from the Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
That reduction is $94,000 or 5% in scholarships for low and lower middle income American Indian students. About 600 students received $1.9 million in awards in 2009, and the average amount was about $3,100. So these students could get a state grant, and then they could also get an Indian scholarship as well, which was very helpful to them. And when we ran the numbers, we're estimating about 30 fewer students would receive scholarships each year. Currently, there are about 600 students on the waiting list. The Minnesota College Savings Plan matching grant, this reduction is 31%, and it's bigger than the others, but that's because we have some additional revenue in the fund, $320,000 each year in funds that are projected to be unspent. This is not expected to reduce the number of recipients for the matching grants, which go to families with incomes of $80,000 and less. In 2007, the matching grants were increased from $300 to $400 each year, and the percentage matched increased for families with incomes from $50,000 to $80,000. And that's a program, as you, I think many of you know, to help encourage. It's the 529 play to help people save for college. In terms of technology, library online database programs, the Learning Network, page 15. The Learning Network of Minnesota, that reduction is 10%. The reduction is $480,000 each year. This may result in additional costs to campuses and libraries for leases to support bandwidth and related technologies. The Learning Network received $1.15 million, or a 7% increase in the 08-09 biennium. Minitex Library Program, this reduction is 10% each year, $563,000. This may result in reduced access to books, articles, and non-print materials for academic and public library uses or increased costs to the library. Minitex receives a $2.5 million or a 13% increase for the 08-09 biennium. The MinLink Library Program, this reduction is $40,000 or 10% each year. This reduction may also may slow the response to user demand for online databases and catalogs. The College Preparedness Program and Outreach, those are also on page 15. The Student and Parent Information Get Ready programs, these are obligations and programs we have in statute. We have a statute obligation to do outreach. This reduction is $15,000 or 4.9% each year and may result in some fewer publications. We do a lot more online, which is great, but some folks don't have that capacity, so we're trying to figure that out. The Intervention for College Attendance Program, or the ICAP grant, this reduction from $49,000 or 10% each year may result in fewer grants to schools, campuses, and community organizations. College courses for high school students, the U of M and MinSU. This was a set aside that was in the Achieve appropriation of $200,000 each year for a total of $400,000 to reach the students. The idea was that it was money that would help them have more college in the school program. We're not opposed to the program. Obviously, we'd like to have more college in the school programs. The concern, I think, was just that that if the committee wants to continue some funding for this concept, you should probably think about how to do it, because one of the problems that arose was that there was some notification issues, and then with the two systems about what are the available funds, and then I think they're trying to kind of work through how they're going to spend the revenue. So it would be probably a good topic of discussion just to talk a little bit more about that, if you want to continue that funding, about how exactly it should be done. We're not opposed. It was sort of a last-minute thing at the end of the session, if you recall. On page 15 also, the bottom, flow through funds to nonprofit organizations. The Midwest Higher Education Compact dues, there's a reduction there that we proposed of $5,000. I know that sounds kind of silly because the dues are sort of set in statute, but the problem is that if we didn't sort of do some across-the-board things, we would have had to take money from somewhere else. So that's clearly something that the committee will have to deal with during the session. The Post-Secondary Service Learning Campus Compact, the reduction there is $24,000 or 10% each year. This result may reduce funds for administration for grants to campuses for service learning. And Jim Scheibel now is the head of the Campus Compact, interim head, and I think you'll see some strategic changes in that organization under his interim leadership. The United Hospitals and Clinics Family Practice Residency Program, that reduction is 10% or $45,000 each year. The funds are to train family practice doctors. That was a new appropriation in 08 and 09. And then the Teacher Education Compensation Helps Early Childhood Teacher Scholarships, that reduction was 100% each year, providing scholarships to child care teachers and providers. It was a new program in 08 and 09. This program is also funded through the Minnesota Department of Human Services, and I think the feeling there was just, given the tough times, that it's a fairly new program, and there was a decision to not fund that this year.
Representative Welty, and then Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Seagard, and just going back to the Post-Secondary Service Learning Campus Compact Program, how long has that been in existence? And I'm also wondering, is that a service that can be provided on campuses rather than from a centralized location?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wolfe, that's a great question, and that's one of the strategic questions I think that Jim Seibel's trying to work through. There's a lot of service learning that already is going on campuses. I think the organization, what they were trying to do is to help leverage some of that. And so I think it would be useful for the committee here and others to probably hear from Jim Seibel and also talk about, you know, whether or not it makes sense to have a standalone program or not. I know Judith Romali, the president of Winona State, is their board chair, and she would be happy to talk with you about that as well.
Representative Blaine.
Thank you, Chair. And Ms. Seagard, I believe I owe you an apology for having missed the meeting that you had scheduled with me earlier this week, and I apologize for that.
Our staff will be back.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, and I just wanted to let you know, now that I know that you won't be there, I wanted to express that to you.
Thank you. It's a phone on her today.
My question has to do with the TEACH program. That was the bill that I introduced. And I'm wondering what the rationale for completely... I mean, you mentioned that it's a new program and all of that, but do you have any more to say about that?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Bly, you know, I don't. I wish that I did have more to say about it. I think there were some decisions that were made just to not fund, you know, some new initiatives completely, and obviously this is something certainly that the committee should talk about. You know, it's probably too new to know if there are any outcomes or not yet, but I don't. I'm sorry about that.
Ms. Seagard, along those lines then, who did make the decisions to cut these small programs, the numbers they decided to cut, if you didn't know about them, or did you have any input, or did the input come from the governor's office on this?
Mr. Chair, we always have an opportunity to have input. You know, we'll make proposals to the governor's office, but it's ultimately a decision that's made by, you know, the Department of Finance, the governor's office, and then by our agency. So there's a process that's gone through, and sometimes we have more influence in some areas and we have less influence in others. It just depends.
You can, it's your last day today, you can tell us whatever you want to tell us. Well, I guess, you know, my comment would be around to your response to Representative Bly that ACHIEVE is a brand new program. And ACHIEVE started off, if my memory serves me correctly, at about $100 million. And then we funded it, I think, in the committee at $10 million. And I think you worked really hard, and I give you credit, and I'm not saying that the money didn't go to the right people, because remember, in committee we limited it to $75,000 and less of income, which the governor wanted higher, but we limited. So the $2.4 million approximately that went out then went to people who normally don't qualify for our state grant program, and I have no problem with that. But that's a new program. It's a program that didn't develop the way that the governor thought. It was his special pet project. So I suppose one could assume that your project wasn't his pet project, and his pet project had more priority than your project. But we get to decide where money goes here on this committee. So we'll certainly take a look, because I'm going to tell you, one of the best programs there is to make a kid learn how to work is work study. And I'm not going to cut $622,000. I might increase work study by $622,000 a year. That's one thing I'm not going to support in this budget proposal, along with probably some other things. But I think that's really short-sighted in that regard to look at that. And I realize there's federal money that comes in there too. But, you know, again, it's your last day. Tell us what goes on. Come on.
It's not dissimilar from probably how you work things out here. I mean, there's a negotiating process, and we get our 2 cents in, and sometimes we'll get a chance to respond to something, and sometimes not. It really depends on the issue. So,
well, here, when I want something, I got to go to Representative Carlson and then beg, and then now I'm going to have to go to Representative Murphy and beg because she's not my hand. Maybe we can fund that the libraries out of the humanities. Okay, Representative
Bly. Thank you, Chair.
See how it works here?
I guess, you know, even though the speech bill is a relatively new bill, in my own mind it is a stimulus kind of bill, because it does encourage people to go up the ladder of success by gaining education and therefore earning a higher wage and being able to contribute more. And this isn't necessarily directed at you, but I've sat in several committees now where I have seen in the governor's budget things cut from people who are on the margin or poor. And I also know in the back of my mind, at his State of the State address, and also in the budget, he talks about cutting taxes to corporations. And you know, a budget is a political statement. It's also, I think, a moral statement. And I just can't ignore the fact that we're taking money away. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know that there have to be cuts, and I respect the efforts that you're making in your own department to cut back and save money. And I know they're going to have to be cuts. But the choices that I see the governor making are to take money away from the struggling and the poor and give it to corporations. And I just can't help wondering, you know, when we're going to spread around the pain rather than hurting those who are really struggling to make their way up in the world.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Bly, I mean, I think that the night is young, as they say. You know, there's lots of time left in the session. So I think a lot of those issues are going to be at the heart of what you all decide to do ultimately.
Well, I guess my only comment on your response to me is, you know, no, I think you and the person sitting next to you and Mr. Mishkanis probably know higher education as well as anybody on the governor's staff. And so somebody on the governor's staff that doesn't know anything about higher education is making a decision for these budget recommendations. And, you know, Representative Bly very well put what you said, but in the end, this committee gets to decide what we present as a bill to the full legislature, and we'll have to go everything through the fine-tooth comb. I don't particularly like a lot of what I see here, and I'm sure Representative Murphy, and I didn't mean to get that glare that my mother used to get at me from you, but I know how dear the whole library, you know, funding is to you. And Ms. Hegarth, you didn't mention, you mentioned the 13% increase in 2007, but you didn't mention what the cut was in 2003, which I think was, well, Mary would know, Representative Murphy would know much better than me, but it was a significant cut, members, especially for the freshmen here, that we tried to make up. And we never made up anywhere near what was cut, I don't think, but maybe you can help me on that, Representative.
And Mr. Chair, before that, we were at a plateau for almost 20 years.
When the governor made a decision not to reduce the state grant program, and we are still given a target, you know, we're asked to make reductions, and so we did our best in terms of trying to prioritize. And there were very difficult decisions. It was very painful sitting around the table making the recommendations that we did.
So, you know, I know there's certain things that weren't put on the table, and like K-12 and public safety, and see my best friend officer is here. We're gonna. If we look at public safety, we're going to protect you. Just you, though. but you know, there's places that aren't taking any cuts, and places that, especially in these dire economic times, should not be cut at all, but are getting cut. So we got a tough job ahead of us. I'm conscious, you know that. Okay. Any other questions on the whole OHC then, or did you want to finish up on regard on? Was there anything else on?
I think we've already gone through the state grant kind of 101, 102 with you the other day. So I don't know whether I need to go through.
Right, and we're going to be having a working group that's going to be looking at that. That's comprised of Representative Slocum and Haas and. Did I put on it over here on this side? Oh, Representative Farland, yeah. So they can delve into that are working with Ms. Grimes and others. Okay, why don't you jump in right to Minsky?
And the Minsky, Mr. Chair and members, the Minsky pages are together in your packet as well. And I'll just try to reference the pages that Ms. Grimes here is so nicely marked for me. I'm going to start on page 9 rather than go through the spreadsheets with you. The sheet that Ms. Grimes is handing out gives us a reference point for reduction 03, and just shows what the reduction was in 03 against the base, and then the current reduction against the base.
We end on page 8. We have a blank page on page 9, but maybe that's the governor's brother's budget proposal for me and you. We only have 8 pages, and the last page is the base is just plain base reduction.
At
least in my budget, maybe somebody put the last page of mine out so I wouldn't get mad about anything.
Well, that's okay. I'll just walk through the talking points and.
Well, tell us. We have your page, but it's numbered differently or something.
So basically, the page 9 says at the top, change item base reduction.
Yeah, well, it's our page 8 here, so that's fine.
All right. For Minsky, my 9, your 8. The governor's budget reduces the general fund base funding of 1.364 billion dollars for Minsky by $73 million each year, or $146 million for the biennium, a reduction of 10.7%. The governor spoke from the State of the State and State of the State address of his interest in making sure that Minsky and the U of M focus their operating funds on highest priority services. Important to look for innovation and efficiency in existing operations and try to reallocate the funds to protect priorities before resorting to tuition increases. In terms of a tuition cap, the governor talked about this. In addition, he's recommending that the Minsky Board of Trustees institute a firm cap on tuition increases to mitigate the effect on students. And just some background on tuition for Minsky. In FY08, tuition at Minsky four-year universities ranked 15th in the country and above the national average. Tuition at Minsky two-year colleges ranked 3rd in the nation. Now, I give a lot of credit to Minsky. They really tried to hold tuition down the last couple of years. I think it was 2 and 3%, if I'm not mistaken. And so look at those rankings that Washington State puts out our rate of increase is much lower than other states, but still our tuition numbers are high for MNCU. MNCU received an increase of $153 million in the 08-09 biennium. In terms of reductions last biennium, the budget cuts in the 08 session and the governor's allotment in December of 08 added up to $27.88 million. And there's a lack of specificity in the governor's recommendation about how these cuts can be made. I think I know that there was quite a bit of discussion about whether the executive branch ought to tell, you know, or recommend ways in which reductions should be made. In the end, there was a decision that it would be important to provide flexibility to the institution, to the board, chancellor, to make those reductions in the way that they best saw fit. For the U of M, that's another, that's in this package here.
Matt, before you jump to the U of M, there's some questions here by members. I'll let Justin Bryant go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hegart, the rankings you're talking about that rank the tuition for a second and, you know, for a two-year and four-year school, do they also look at level of government support for comparable states? Because to me that's a significant factor to understand the relationship between the tuition and the level of state support. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Reinert, there's a separate ranking done out of Illinois State University at Bloomington Normal that looks at state support on both overall and on a per student basis among various states.
We can make that available to you and the committee. This particular study comes out of the Washington State Higher Ed Board, and if you go to their website, you can find it there. But if you'd like that, we'll look that up for you and get it to you.
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, just a point on that question. Years ago when we were looking into state support across the country, many states also have a local component for community colleges and technical colleges. So when you talk about state support, I think you also want to take, when you're looking at other states, to look at what they may do, quite frankly, on their property tax in some instances. But North Carolina, if I recall, was one that generated a fair amount of their support off the property tax because they're locally controlled and they get some state aid.
Ms. Speaker, back to page 8, your page 9, the MNCU. You know, and what does the governor mean in the background there, bullet, that MNCU must be expected to eliminate duplication in its program? What does that mean? That English should only be offered in St. Paul and Croatian on the Iron Range, or what does it mean? That English shouldn't be offered somewhere else? Or?
No, Mr. Chair, I don't know specifically what that refers to, other than I think it's in the theme of kind of making sure that there's just efficiency, you know, being driven through the organization, and the extent, I suppose, where there is duplication. I don't know that they try to eliminate a necessary duplication.
Well, I don't, you know, members, if you look at this sheet that was just handed out by Ms. Grimes, and you look at what actually got spent by MNCU, let's take MNCU over on the far right, what actually got spent in 2002 and 2003, and then you look at what the governor is actually recommending to spend in 2008 and 2009, we are spending less in dollars, in actual dollars, mm-hmm. than we did, what is that, 5 or 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. To me, I guess this begs the question, what has happened to our great state? Really. President Carlson, you've been working on higher education since 1973 around here. And you know the importance of higher education. And I think, and I'm going to get some numbers for the workforce side of this, Representative Anderson, who... You're the lead Democrat, so just be prepared because I think the we're going to show that when Purpose was the governor, and we weren't talking about tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts to business all the time, and raising a little revenue so that our higher education institutions at the time were getting what, Lynn, probably 12, 13, or maybe even 14% of the state budget? And now they're getting barely over 8. That we had more job creation than under the current governor, 6 years of where we've heard nothing but cut taxes for business, cut taxes, and we don't have jobs. So, but, you know, somebody's got to pay the taxes so we can keep our society going. But I think it's striking that we actually have less in real dollars 6 years later than we had 6 years ago in our higher education system. And maybe that's the reason why, and not our tax structure in this state, that we have fewer jobs than we did back then. But Representative Anderson, I'll give you the last word. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know what you eat for lunch before you come to these committees, but you might want to change your diet. You always just seem to come in a little riled up here.
Representative Anderson, I
appreciate your comment.
You never sat on a kit committee. I
have not. I know.
I am being very nice so far.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You can ask any of the other members of the country. Go ahead.
Well, I just got to say, Mr. Chair, I kind of feel like I'm repeating Groundhog Day here. It's like the movie because, you know, in 2003, though I wasn't a legislator here, at that time you didn't have a budget plan. And we're talking here now, we're a month into session, and we still don't have a budget plan from you. And so I'm just, I realize that you have concerns about this budget, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what you have to propose. When it comes to our budget, specifically for this committee, and then of course the big picture overall. So I'll sit and wait and look forward to seeing it.
Well, if I was emperor, you would have a plan, but if I was governor, you'd have a plan. And maybe when I am governor someday, and you're the majority leader or the speaker, you can work with me to have a good plan. But Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hegart, I'd like to pursue Chair Rukavina's comments regarding the duplication assumption here. I think it's appropriate for us as a committee to ask for some more specificity there because that seems to be the governor's recommendation to cap tuition seems to hinge on the assumption that the $73 million can be taken from other places. And so I think we have a right to see what the administration considers duplication and reallocation, at least some sketch of that, in order to take seriously the assumption that tuition can be capped and services retained.
Do you want to respond?
Well, I think we'll take some notes and get back to you on that. I mean, I think it was just a general theme of making sure that there's efficiency, you know, that efficiency is a focus, and that if there potentially is duplication, that there's a look taken at that.
Representative Gosner.
Thank you. Mr. Garrett, I can't agree with that. There's a lot of things that we have to look into our crystal ball to figure out what was in the governor's mind, but as far as Representative Rukavina being governor, I certainly want to be in the legislature when you are.
I want you on my staff. I want a good moderate Republican.
I'm there.
You might have McElroy's job. Okay, let's see. No, I lost my train of thought. On to the University of Minnesota then. I thought, what really threw me off though was not even Gunther's. I kind of looked over at Representative Wealthy at the corner of my eye. He was smiling over here, and I was worried and nervous about if he was expecting something out of me or if he was thinking about something or what. But,
no problem.
Okay. We'll go on to the university then, Mr. Chair.
University of Minnesota. That's another set of pages here, and I don't know whether your page is my page or not. What was that?
We start off labeling your letter as page one.
Yeah, go to page, it's 8 in ours, so it's back a few pages.
Let's see, it's 7 in ours. We only have 7 pages. See, we gave you, we put number one under your name.
For the University of Minnesota, the governor is recommending a reduction of $75.5 million each year for a total of $151 million for the biennium. This is a 10.7% reduction from the base. Again, the governor, respecting the constitutional autonomy of the university, calls upon the regents to examine the operations of business processes in order to find innovation and efficiencies where possible and reallocate people resorting to tuition increases. Again, the governor recommends that the regents institute a firm cap on tuition increases. Tuition at the U is in the middle compared to Big Ten universities. Last biennium, the university received an increase of $180 million. In terms of reductions last biennium, the budget cuts in the 08 session and the governor's unallotment in December of 08 added up to $32.3 million. The governor, again with the university, tried to provide flexibility so that they could have as much flexibility as possible in trying to meet their budget reductions. I thought one thing I wanted to just note is that, you know, the two public systems are very different from one another, both the campuses and the systems as a whole. They have different capacities to raise revenue, different revenue streams, and they have different levels of family income. And so I think as you're trying to, whether it's you're working through the state grant program or you're working through the overall budget situation, I think it is important to recognize the uniqueness and the differences among the schools in our state.
Representative Welker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Seegard, you know, you made a good comment there about comparing certain elements and not comparing others and comparing apples to apples, oranges to oranges, or apples to oranges. So I have a question for you, and I'm hoping that we can get an answer with maybe a few more specifics, and that is comparing the University of Minnesota to MinSCU and the system at MinSCU that we have of a central office with quite a bit of administration in the central office. Compare that to the University of Minnesota and their administrative program. What do you see as similar? What do you see as different? And can you give me any opinion on effectiveness of the two systems?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm representing both the ineffectiveness, if that was your last word. I don't know if I can do that, but MinSCU has a central office, and I know that it's a subject of discussion annually, biannually, about the size of the administrative office at MinSCU. You know, we haven't done a study on the size of it. I think, and I think the office, if you want some help, you know, I think if you want some help with that, we'd be willing to do that. But I think they've been trying to reduce their administration. I know the board has had an interest in trying to make sure that they're not heavy on administration at MinSCU, and I'm sure with these budget reductions, they'll be looking carefully at that, too. They have a lot more campuses than the University of Minnesota, so they've got a central office, but they also have, you know, lots of presidents. They tried to, I think, in a couple parts of the state, up in the range, down in the southwestern corner of the state, and then I think up in the northwestern corner of the state, they've tried to consolidate the administration for some of their campuses. And they have one president, but they have five campuses, you know, down in that southwestern area and up in the range too, when Joe Sertich retired. He was ahead of that. So that's my understanding. That's how MinSCU is set up. The U of M is different. You know, they have less campuses, in some cases, larger numbers of students on some of the on the Twin Cities campus. They have larger schools, you know, and so there'll be administration kind of tied in with each of the schools. You know, I don't feel comfortable answering questions. I think you get better information by asking the systems to come up and talk with you about their administration. I don't feel comfortable answering deep questions or detailed questions about that today.
You know, members, again, look at that handout. And you see the same patterns for the university, too, over the last 6 years. So we've got our work cut out for us, and there's no doubt about that. If you cap tuition and you make these kind of cuts, the only alternative that the systems have is to lay off staff. Now, does the governor think there's too much non-teaching staff, or does he think that professors and other teachers and pre-teacher's aides are going to have to go, or where do you make this kind of money up, I guess?
Well, Mr. Chair, I've never had an in-depth conversation with the governor about that, but I do know that there are runs you can do, you know, by professor and by courts, and looking at sort of numbers across, you know, these institutions. There are ways to do that. The school systems have some good data on their websites. But I guess the thing I would say is that this is not a problem that, my understanding is that this economic problem isn't going to go away tomorrow. You know, we faced it in 03, we're facing it now, and we'll probably face it again in the future. And so one of the questions I think you all have to think about is, and the systems too, is do we need to try to figure out some different ways to provide the education to students? And I'm being very general about that, but I don't know how, if these reductions, you know, if this economic situation persists, I don't know how we can continue to do things sort of the same way. And that's not just specific to higher ed, it's K-12 and, you know, human services, etc. So I wouldn't say that the only solution is to lay off people. I have never heard him say that. But I think looking at efficiencies and innovation and opportunities across the system is what he has in mind.
Any particular?
Mr. Chair, today, no, I don't have any particulars for you.
Could someone from OAC maybe look, instead of looking into the crystal ball, actually have a conversation with someone in the governor's office about what he, as Representative Breyer said, what he means by, you know, getting rid of duplicative services, or, as he says, for the university, in order to find ways to reduce duplication on his program? What he means by that specifically?
Mr. Chair, you know, we can...
I don't understand it, I mean...
Mr. Chair, we can certainly do that, but...
Does it mean that there shouldn't be, a MD school in Duluth, Minnesota, because there's a doctor and residency program at Minneapolis, or... You know, I don't know what it means.
What
maybe
I do...
there shouldn't be a St. Cloud University, or there should be a Mankato, or I don't know. What does it mean? I get real nervous. Oh, I see the pension people here. And I don't know if they came to tell us that the pension system is completely shut down, or we only lost 30%, or I don't know if my good friend came to arrest me up there, or what's going on, but maybe they found some money for the committee. But can someone at OAC do this?
We could certainly talk with the governor's office, and we'd also be willing to talk with the systems about some ideas. I know that there's a statewide initiative called LEAD right now going on, and our Commissioner of Administration, Dana Badgell, is working with Minsky and the U on that, and there is some work being done to try to eliminate duplication of some services to try to streamline things. I mean, for example, should... hypothetically, each, you know, the U of M and Minsky have their own recycling program. Is there some way to, you know, work with the state to have a recycling program? Are there ways to buy things in bulk, you know, more efficiently? I mean, that, I think, is part of what the governor's trying to get at, just knowing him when he talks about duplication. Are there ways, and there are some very engaged people that we've been talking to at Minsky and at the U about this, this work, in trying to partner with Governor Doyle over in Wisconsin? Are there ways the two states can partner to try to not have two things? Maybe there's one thing they can do better together. That's
one governor. We'll take the Democrats.
Yeah.
Representative Overfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have the benefit of having the history on this committee. I'm one of the first termers here. Could you tell me where the governor's position is on the firm tuition cap he's talking about? Is he suggesting we should cap it at its current location, or does he have a percentage in mind of a maximum increase?
Mr. Chair, I have not heard him talk of a specific number. I just know that in 03, we basically talked with the systems about kind of a soft cap, and I think he was troubled that both systems went up close to 15%, you know, a year on tuition. Minsky, not so much, but the U. And so I think that right now he's open, you know, to discussion, but I think he'd really like to see those caps stay low. you know, much lower than 15%. And I think, you know, in some states, legislators are looking at instituting caps. You know, that I don't think that's something that either system wants, but I know the governor of Michigan has just proposed a cap. She's a Democrat. It's probably something that will come up again and again in this committee and just in this session.
Representative Easton. Were you done, Mr. Chair?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a second semester statement from the University of Duluth, Minnesota Duluth, that was given to me by one of my constituents. And I, you know, we talk so much about what it costs to go to school and how the tuition and the cost of education. We hear students here talking about, you know, they're in debt. And I think it's interesting to look at this because the undergraduate tuition here for the term is $4,115, but the bill is for $6,146. And, I mean, if we go down here, we have a student services fee, $230. We have a capital improvement fee, $25. We have a university fee for the term, $550. We have student health benefit fee. We have internet access fee, $70. I mean, how can we get our arms around what it actually costs on a given year for a student, for an undergraduate student, to go to a year of college? Is there any way that we could get some information over time so we know what it costs? What it cost in 1995, what it cost in 2000, what it cost in 2005, yeah, and we could kind of sort through this. Regardless of where the funds come from, if they come from the state, if they come are paid through tuition, what's happening to the total cost of the education process? I mean, is it increasing at a rate that exceeds what it should be? I mean, I guess I'm having a hard time trying to understand how we can even look at this objectively.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Eastman, we do have on our agency website, and we'd like to share that with you, a chart showing tuition and required fees over time.
Tuition is only one side. What's the college spending? What's coming in through the state? What's the total cost? I think that was referred to earlier. When you look at tuition, that's only looking at one piece of it. What's the total cost that's going into the education for 1 year of an undergraduate student? I guess that would be interesting to know.
Representative Easton, I think I kind of put both systems on notice when I was ranting and raving with that old budget book the other day, that's what I wanted to see, so we could see it and compare it, so we know. You know, maybe it doesn't. I don't know, I can ask staff here. Maybe Mr. Berg would know, but I mean, I'm sure that if we just combine fees and tuition together, you can get an honest picture of, we can get that information. Mr. Berg helped me out here, but I imagine if we don't have to break everything down, we could combine it, and they probably have it too, and we can see what is happening on the income side for them with all those different health fees of that, and on the spending side, we can get that too, and we've asked for more detail. We're going to get a lot more detail than this. Like I told you, I told both the president and the chancellor that, and Ms. Hegar's gone now, but I find it amazing that, the barber and cosmetology budget's thicker than the other ones. I mean, it's 800,000? I don't even know what it is. Budget compared to 1.3 or 4 billion dollars. So, I don't know. Do you want to, Mr. Berg, you want to comment at all?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this data is available. As Ms. Grimes says, there's tuition and required fees over time. You're going to see that on their website, or the systems can provide it. But I guess I would just interject, you're talking sort of about two sides of the same thing. On one side is tuition and fees, what students pay. Your question, Representative Eastland, seems to go towards instructional expenditures. What does it cost to educate a student, which is funded from a mix of fees, tuition, state appropriation, revenues from enterprise units, I guess, to some extent. That's also available in various forms. The Minnesota State Colleges and Universities produces an instructional cost study every year that looks programmatically at the per student instructional cost for but most programs across the entire system by campus. The university no longer does it that way. They do it more in aggregate. But I would also point you to, in the case of, I'm looking at the University of Minnesota, page 3 in your budget book. There were some revisions to statute a couple of years ago about after we got rid of our funding formula, there were some things put in about information they have to report. And you see at the bottom there that the legislature required in 207 that they report instructional expenditures and non-instructional expenditures in the budget document, and here you have it. For fiscal 2007, the University of Minnesota spent $644,461,760 on instruction. And you can go up and elsewhere in here it has, I believe it has students and undergraduates. You can make calculations about what was spent per student, but since I'm talking about this to complicate this further, I think members got some information from the finance department looking at the governor's cuts on a per student basis. Mr. Roloff was asked about that. And the point I've made to a number of legislators is state statute no longer says what we're funding in higher education. There used to be a formula in statute which was repealed in 2003, I believe it was. And there is no longer any statutory connection between what we're paying, what the amount we spend, and what we're paying for. So you can say all the money was taken off of undergraduate instruction, or all of it was taken off of graduate instruction, or we stopped paying the recycling bill, or anything you want. There's no longer any connection in statute between instruction and state expenditure.
Mr. Berg, in your long experience here, do you think that's bad or good? Or aren't you supposed to give us an opinion?
Mr. Chairman, it's more complicated than that. I would say that having information about what systems spend on instruction is something that legislators and the public and everybody wants to know something about. The federal government collects some information on that. Certainly the system should be able to talk about how much they spend on educating a student. The issue of whether in the state budget there should be a direct connection between the amount the state spends per student and how much a system gets is a little more complicated matter. And I think when the funding formula went away, both systems, neither one of them fought it very much because they pragmatically looked at the state budget and said, like everything else in the state budget, it's largely a base plus, base minus system. If there's more money, we'll get some more, and if there's not more money, we'll be cut. And so neither of them fought very heavily to retain a funding formula that they didn't see as functional or working to their advantage.
It just seems to me, I mean, I appreciate that, but it seems to me that we can talk about history and where we've been and all that kind of stuff, but it would be interesting, from my standpoint anyway, to see over time what has happened to the total instructional costs for our students. You know, has it increased at a rate of 15%? Has it increased at a rate of 6%? I don't even know. But I think those would be helpful things to put in perspective what's happening here. I mean, if we have a cost structure that's driving costs at a much faster rate than it should be growing, we're never going to catch it. We're never going to catch up to it. And I think we to understand that would be beneficial for everybody.
Representative Eastland, if you want that information, Mr. Berg will try to get that information for you from somewhere.
Mr. Chair, we were just recalling that at
Ms. Grimes can get that information for us from somewhere.
Mr. Chair, we were recalling at the MEC meeting in November that Jane Wellman with the Delta Project had provided some information about this in her report, so that may be another source of that for you, Mr. Berg.
And they have specific Minnesota information?
Mr. Chairman, I believe so. I believe it's by institution.
Okay. See what you can find for all of us on the committee. You already saw it. Representative Nornes, or do you want to take the blame, Representative Nornes, for that change in 2003?
I was around in that year. I remember it well. But along with what Representative Eastland was talking about, I would like to also see the compensation that we have, the growth in compensation during those years. Just to see what that percentage figures out to be, not that they're overpaid or anything like that, but a testifier the other day said that they were cutting $1 million at 12 FTEs, and that figures out to be about $83,000 per person. So I'm just curious how much of a factor that is as we see the cost of education going up.
So Representative Norris, you are requesting what?
To see the, when you talk about the cost of education, how much, you know, most of the overhead has is people, wages.
So would you like those wages broken down into by bargaining units?
Not, well, however,
because
it's going to
be a skewed picture if you look at McCormick's pay increase versus his janitor.
I guess I'm thinking of just the general faculty, perhaps not necessarily the, but, you know, so you've got the faculty, your main faculty, not the support staff, not, I don't know if it's possible to even do that, but.
Ms. Grimes, or do you have any suggestion on that?
Mr. Chairman, I believe there's data in the Integrated Post-Secondary Education Data System, the federal, from the Federal National Center for Education Statistics, on compensation of faculty that might be there.
Can you get us from somewhere, Ms. Grimes? And I would like it even more. I would like it on management, non-instructional, somehow, and by non-represented people in management and non-instructional versus, you know. And then let's also look at the increase in healthcare expenses, because maybe I can get some votes to nationalize the Representative Gunter. You aren't going to be my deed commissioner if you don't agree with that one. So, so get us. Well, he hasn't said no yet either. So get us that information, at least on the. And maybe it wouldn't hurt for us to see other skyrocketing, at least things that jump out, which I'm sure health insurance does. Okay, Representative Gunter. Is this an acceptance speech?
My question has been asked and answered.
Okay, Representative Dowling. Nobody from Edina yet on that.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm probably just echoing the same comments, but maybe wanting to go officially on the record as suggesting that I think our committee probably needs to go a lot deeper than maybe we typically do. I asked the question of the Minsky Chancellor whether or not they were really intentionally kind of looking at system-wide capacity in terms of how they manage their organization and tried to come to grips with these cuts. And we got the conceptual answer, yes, we do. But I think in a time like this where, you know, the governor's budget is, everybody in Minnesota has gone back to 2003, right? I mean, financially, we've all gone back 5 years. Probably every person around this room and all of our constituents have. And I think the governor's budget is trying to say, state government needs to participate in that, and that's, you know, that's tough. We're pruning a tree here. We got to prune it the right way. So I would like to, on behalf of the state and thinking about the mission of Minsky and the University of Minnesota, get kind of a comprehensive picture of those systems, kind of entity by entity across these different types of expenditures, and ask our committee, challenge our committee to really do a deep dive and look at those things and participate in maybe a more detailed budgeting process than we might typically do. We might have deferred that simply to the systems themselves, but I think it's incumbent on us to dig down to that level. So I'm a freshman, I'm a Republican, and I'm from Edina, but I'll make the request that maybe we spend some committee time getting to that level of detail, into that level of detail across both of these systems. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think I have kind of put the systems on notice. Is that what we want to go back to that big green book, maybe in a different way, but, you know, and I know Minsky came by the office and said that they can give us that kind of detail on every campus if we want. And maybe we have to. You know, I've had a discussion with Representative Welty, I think, early on about maybe putting some other working groups to do the same thing I was hoping Representative Folkham and her two members would do. But maybe it's the job of the whole committee to look at that stuff and dig deep. I don't know yet.
Mr. Chair, I would appreciate that the whole committee do that. I think this needs to be an open process. And I'm a little concerned that working groups may be done more, not secretively, but at least a little bit behind closed doors. And I really think that in order for us to really understand, it's prudent for all of us to be at the table understanding what it is, that where the money is going, where it's coming from, how it's being spent, And I would just appreciate, rather than just throw on working groups, I think that we have very good staff here who will help us collect some information, but for all of us to be aware of what the outcomes might be.
Our first committee deadlines, I think, are what we're doing, March 27th or whatever it was. Our bill has to be out, I think, the day after our Easter break or 2 days after. Day after Easter break, Representative Carlson, and then a couple of days before they're on the floor. So, you know, maybe we'd have to start having evening meetings, you know, in a little while if we have to want to dig that deep, because there are other agencies we have to dig deep into. We have the Department of Employment and Economic Development, Representative Downey, that is not only charged with paying, you know, unemployment insurance and extended unemployment insurance and federal extension unemployment insurance and you know, TAA and other programs there, but we've got the other side of it that's supposed to be working on economic development and employing people and trying to get them back to work, which is, to me, a very important thing. You know, in 1983, before I was even here, Representative Carlson's the only one person sitting at this table now. We had a downturn in the economy that wasn't quite as bad as this one, but for the time was a pretty serious recession, too. We had a governor then from the reins by the name of Purpose who started a MEED program, Minnesota Employment Emergency Department, I think it was called, where at that time it was like $130 or $150 million over the biennium to put people to work, working with private businesses. Maybe Representative Gunther even took advantage of that program and hired people and small business people, and I got paid. We got that kind of situation to look at in this right here in our own committee, because we've got that. We've got the Department of Labor and Industry that has a budget with hundreds of millions of dollars, both of those agencies, where we really never look at that money. But we've got programs that are being cut, you know, are being supposed to be cut by the governor in those areas too. So we're going to have to look at all of that stuff. And we've got a big job ahead of us this committee. I keep getting notes. Please don't be telling me to shut up here. But Representative Welty, did you have...
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just a point, and the testifier apologize for making you wait up there a little bit longer, but...
Last day.
Yeah.
You didn't have to do this anymore. We should really be torturing her, but anyway.
First of all, I must say, Ms. Teagard, you've always been very professional. You've always provided information that we've asked for, and I just want to say that I acknowledge that you do very good work over at OHE, and sad to see you go, because I really see you as nonpartisan staff, somebody we can look to who doesn't give us really a partisan answer. Although I would like some more detail, and if you are really willing to sit down and give us some detail, be behind the doors, whatever it is, to get the details and your recommendations, because if you go, you're a wealth of knowledge, and if we don't get some of the things that you see that need to be changed, then we lose the opportunity to make real changes. But beyond that, I also want to say that it's not, I don't see it as being possible for us to have all of the questions that were raised here today, asking staff to get information and provide it to the committees to continue doing the work that we really need to do. And it's going to be incumbent upon all of us to request the information that we want, to delve into these budgets, and to come with true recommendations when we start putting together these final budgets. I sat in on the conference committee a couple of years ago, and I learned a lot during that conference committee process. But if we think we're going to get the work done by just asking questions here in committee of our testifiers and our staff, it's just not going to be possible because of the time limits that we have. And session will be over before you know it. Our budget will be moving before we know it. And so I'm just recommending, I've already consulted with Mr. Berg on getting detailed information from NCU and other institutions, and I'm delving into it. So I just encourage all of you to do the same and bring your questions that we can really learn a lot from, and recommendations. And let's have some real good discussion about saying, I've looked at this area, I think this needs to be changed, this is how we can do it. We need to have those type of discussions, and rarely do we really do that. From what I've seen over the past 4 years, and I think now it's going to be very important in this budget session that we do understand the budget. Rather than just looking at the change item, we really have to understand what we're doing.
you're right. And Ms. Seagard, and of course, Representative Welty, I've told Mr. Burt to just give you what I want him to give you, but he does work for all of you. Remember, he works for all of you equally. He's on partisan staff. He does a great job. He keeps everything. Your requests are your requests. He keeps them private, and because he is a professional. So if you want to do it, you know, all of you got your own little, you know, areas of interest, prejudices, whatever you want to call them. Mr. Berg, he's just had a new baby, but I'm sure he'll work. Well, your wife always come by. I hope you helped. I mean, you know, anyway, Representative Detmer, but before I just want to say also, Ms. Seagard, that we do appreciate, you know, all you've done, and that we wish you success, and your party starts at 4 o'clock today, and I've always liked you, but I'd like you a lot more if you could find about $150 million at the Bush Foundation and just give it to the committee. But with that, Representative Detmer.
I'll forego my question. It's time to...
Representative Poppy. Minutes. Representative Poppy moves the minutes of the Tuesday, February 3rd meeting. Are there any additions or corrections to those? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Members, Tuesday we have Mr. McElroy in front of us here, so you dig in.
Mr. Chair, you mentioned 4 o'clock. Actually, we're gathering at 4 to 4:30. So I hope you'll come and join us for Ferns on Selby.
Ferns and...
Fabulous Ferns.
That's why the trooper was here. He's my designated driver for the...
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say... You've always been great to work with, and I really appreciate the way you've been so respectful. The members have been respectful to our staff and to me. Despite your differences with the governor, you've always treated me very respectfully, and I've had a lot of fun. It's been a great ride, and I didn't expect to leave this soon, but this opportunity came to me unexpectedly, and I couldn't say no to it. But I really have had a great experience here, and I'm happy to have spent.
Thank you. And members, remember, dig into that these numbers in here, and don't just look at the general fund numbers as these for Tuesday either. Meeting adjourned.